This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on December 17th, 2015. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next item is item number five, rulemaking petition to revise commission regulations in response to the Citizens United case. The petitions were filed by Make Your Laws PAC, I believe, and Public Citizen, and I see Craig Holman is here in the audience from Public Citizen. I don't know if Cy is on the line. No. Okay. So,
but he's probably listening.
Right. I'm sure he's. I'm sure he's listening. So, are there any comments by any of the commissioners about this matter?
I just have one question for counsel. You know, this petition comes to us with a unique provenance, and I just want to be sure that our general counsel is sure that it is still in order for us to vote on this as a six-member commission. And the point is,
are you suggesting that there's a conflict of interest?
No, not a conflict, but
or
perhaps
a necessity for, excuse me,
a prejudgment. So I just want to be sure that the council's comfortable. That's all. The original petition that was filed out of order by two commissioners stated strongly worded positions in it what the commission should do. In other words, it's an opinionated petition. It was subsequently copied and submitted by somebody else, but it is the same language. And under the petition regulation of 200.3D, there's an explicit provision for the commission's consideration of petitions brought by citizens before the commission that the commission will not consider the merits of the petition before the expiration of the comment period on the notice of availability. And I just before we proceed to a vote that could be tainted with some impropriety, I just want to be sure that that does not evidence prejudgment of the merits, but given the provenance of this petition.
Mr. Noddy.
The OGC's view is that regardless of what may or may not have been the issues with the prior petition, that petition was withdrawn, this one was refiled, that petition was withdrawn, this one that's now pending was filed, is a separate standalone petition unrelated to the first one, and therefore, unless there are other things have happened since that was filed that I'm not aware of, that those concerns wouldn't be an issue here.
No evidence. Okay. I just wanted that opinion of counsel. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, let me make a couple of comments now that we have that potential problem that's been made up to dealt with. You know, the campaign finance landscape has been transformed in the last few years, and the commission has done very little to adapt our rules to that change. Citizens United itself had two very explicit safeguards about corruption. One was that independent expenditures are truly independent, and the second is that campaign spending is fully disclosed. Last year, when we were discussing the Citizens United rulemaking, and even before that, when you, Commissioner Goodman, and I testified at our hearings before the Senate Rules Committee, we both talked about the importance of rulemakings to provide guidance to the public and to those who are subject to the law to understand how to comply. And that was something you spoke about often, as did I, that we both agreed on. And actually, I think that most of those of you on this side of the dais spoke strongly about the need to do that in the case of Citizens United. And I made clear at the time when I provided the fourth vote in that rulemaking that there was undone, unfinished business related to Citizens United. Now, though, when proposals to clarify our rules in areas that are covered by this petition, such as the disclosure of dark money, campaign spending by foreign nationals, coercion of employees, coordination between candidates and super PACs, it appears that suddenly the colleagues on this commission don't think that it's important to have clarification about the rules, about the issues that are some of the most significant issues pending before us in this electoral campaign. I mean, even Justice Kennedy, who wrote the majority opinion in Citizens United, is concerned that the disclosure system isn't working the way it should. In recent remarks at Harvard Law School, he said, "In my view, what happens with money in politics is not good. Disclosure of who's financing elections is the answer." But he admitted that it's not working the way it should, and it's not working the way he anticipated it was going to do, it was going to happen. And on the coordination front, you know, the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United was premised on the assumption that outside spending was truly independent of the candidates. Our coordination rules were enacted prior to the existence of super PACs. They're hopelessly outdated. They do not deal with super PACs at all. So everybody in this country except the FEC is discussing some of the major issues with campaign finance today. And we're principally responsible for implementing and enforcing campaign finance rules, and yet we have failed to address some of the biggest changes in the system post-Citizens United. These petitions raise some of those most significant issues. They go to the core of our democratic processes and to the ideal of ensuring fair political processes, and it seems to me that opening a rulemaking to have people discuss the potential of rules and strengthen the rules in this area is something that this commission really is obligated to do, but actually should do. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, of course, I agree with everything that you just said. Ever since Citizens United, I have tried on numerous occasions to open a rulemaking that would address some of the new issues on the ground out there. I mean, politics has really changed in the last 5 years. We discussed it earlier in the context of the AOs. It's obvious to everybody out there that politics has changed. According to a recent New York Times poll, 84% of Americans, including 80% of Republicans, agree that money has too much influence in American political campaigns today. 55% think that most of the time, candidates who win public office promote policies that directly help the people and groups who donated money to their campaigns. 85% said the current system for funding political campaigns should be either fundamentally changed or completely rebuilt. 85% think the way we're doing it now, the rules that are on the books, are not working. And I just find it, you know, commissioners speak out on all sorts of issues that are near and dear to their heart. I've heard Commissioner Goodman on Fox News and in editorials speak out strongly on issues that are near and dear to his heart. I've never seen him recuse himself from then voting on that issue when it comes to the table. It's somewhat remarkable to me. When we brought this petition, our colleagues objected that we couldn't do it because it was the predecessor petition, excuse me. Our colleagues said we couldn't do it because we weren't persons under the Act. Now that other people have said they too are concerned about these issues and they wanted to bring it before the commission, Commissioner Goodman is trying to box us out again and tell us, trying to tease counsel into saying that it's somehow inappropriate for us to even vote on this. The lengths to which some of our colleagues will go to try and shut us up on these issues is really quite striking to me. But we believe strongly that we are in sync with the American people, and that people outside of Washington don't find these to be terribly astonishing propositions, that money ought to be transparent in politics, that we don't want to see foreign influence in our elections, that organizations, employers, and labor organizations shouldn't be in a position to coerce their employees. In this world in which they now have new political rights themselves, they shouldn't be able to coerce their employees into participating in political activities that may or may not be in sync with those employees, or in the case of labor organizations, those members, their own political views. And that when super PACs are out there spending millions of dollars funded by billionaires and not necessarily representing the views of ordinary Americans, that at the very least, we ought to make sure that that money is being spent in a way that is independent of the campaigns, so that the candidates are not wholly in the pockets of the people who are funding the super PACs. There was a study that was written about recently that talked about how 158 families had provided almost half of the money that was spent in the early parts of the primary season. That's a very just vanishingly small percentage of the American population. And there was a there was an article today in USA Today, which if I can pull it up. See if I can find it. Sorry, I had it pulled up before. And Alec, we're going to have to work on our. I won't bother because it's too hard to pull it up on my phone, because our internet is really not. The Wi-Fi is not up to snuff in here. But the USA Today had an article today that said something like, I think the statistic was 84% of the advertisement that were run in the early parts of the Republican primary had been funded by super PACs. And you can and compared that to the 1% in 2008 that was funded by outside spending groups in 2008. That's the difference from Citizens United. We've gone from 1% of the ads being funded by outside spenders to practically all of the ads being funded by outside spenders. And I think it's really important for the American people to know where that money is coming from, and that it is being done to the extent that billionaires are able to fund these organizations, that at least it's being done in a way that preserves some possibility of independence, and that our government is not going to be elected by people who are just wholly indebted to this very small slice of the population. The good folks at who run the Open Secrets website have pointed out that we are seeing more money coming from fewer donors and with less transparency. That's the effect of Citizens United. People feel, ordinary citizens feel like there's no point in contributing to political campaigns because they're just not going to get any. Their voice is not going to be heard in a world in which the very wealthy have such a disproportionate role. So I think that these four things that are the subject of the petition, to improve disclosure and to prohibit foreign money, to make sure that we ban coercion and that the expenditures by the super PACs are indeed independent, I think they would not solve all of these problems, but they would be a small step in the right direction. And it is irresponsible of us to refuse to even take the step of opening the door to comments and considering doing this when we had suggested earlier this year that we were thinking about doing a rulemaking or would consider doing a rulemaking. We got thousands and thousands of comments on this, a very unusual level of comments for this agency. At the beginning of the year, we received over 30,000 comments, three or four of which said the commission should act in response to these particular petitions. We received another 11,000 comments, nearly 97 of them supported the petition and asked the commission to open a rulemaking. I mean, I guess we can just tell the American public that we don't care what they have to say, but I kind of do. I kind of think we ought to listen to them. And I am prepared, once again, to make a motion. The motion is on blue paper, so I didn't want to. No one could be surprised by it. We made the motion itself public so that everyone would know what we were planning on doing here today. And I hope against hope that we might get support on the commission for actually opening this rulemaking and responding to the views of the public.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the last, I guess, 4 years, we've probably had similar. This issue has arisen on a number of occasions. I believe twice in 2011. We voted on proposed notices of proposed rulemaking to open up rulemakings along this same line. And the position that I held then is still the position that I hold now. I don't really... even need to delve too deeply into the substance of this in order to still have concerns about going forward on this particular rulemaking. Shortly after Citizens United was passed, Congress took up the Disclose Act. They debated it at length. It passed out of the House. It died in the Senate. Since that time, there have been numerous efforts to revive the Disclose Act or some approximation of that of that effort in order to expand disclosure requirements for corporations and labor organizations, to expand or clarify the nature of the foreign national prohibition on making contributions and expenditures. And those have not gone anywhere. And As an administrative agency, and we are appointed by the president, but we are not elected. We are not the vehicles through which the public expresses their desires and their demands in terms of what they want as the best policy. We carry out what Congress enacts through legislation. And that is the body through which popular content or discontent expresses itself. And since Citizens United, Congress has not legislated in this area. And I don't view my role as a commissioner to feel like I step into the void when Congress doesn't act. Whether I agree with their actions or disagree with their actions, I think that what Congress does or does not do, as it's the case in this instance, is significant, and that as a commissioner, I believe that it is my responsibility to take that into account when determining whether or not I'm going to move forward on a particular rulemaking. I believe, especially with respect to the disclosure and foreign nationals, this I believe is firmly within the purview of Congress. I don't believe I'm. I think the polls that Commissioner Weintraub mentioned, I haven't read them. I'll trust that they're accurate. And if the public demand is that great, then that will, I assume at some point, actually move those who represent the individuals expressed that are being polled to make legislative changes. And when that happens, we will make the appropriate modifications in our rules to accommodate those changes. That hasn't happened. And I believe that I have a responsibility to acknowledge and respect the decisions that Congress makes and the decisions that they do not make in this area. I don't believe that I am ignoring the public in this particular case. I know that there have been thousands of people who have submitted comments. There are other comments that have come in on behalf of thousands of businesses and thousands of constituents who have recommended not moving forward in this particular case. So This is an issue that's arisen before. These are points that I've made before. I make them again now. I'd also just make mention with respect to the coercion. The proposal is to clarify the coercion. I'm not aware of of the deficiencies in our current law, which are fairly robust in terms of preventing coercion. And we've had enforcement matters that this commission has gone forward on with respect to those provisions. And in terms of coordination, super PACs are subject to the coordination. All entities, all groups, parties, candidates are subject to the coordination rules. And that coordination rule, which arose after the Cain-Feingold, but then was subject to court challenges, was further modified after Citizens United was handed down by the Supreme Court. So I don't think that it's not accurate to say that the coordination rule hasn't been looked at or modified. Now, I know that we have maybe some disagreement on whether or not the current rule is adequate, but to say that super PACs are somehow not subject to it, I don't think is, or that it somehow doesn't capture super PACs, I don't think is accurate. They are subject to the same extent that parties or any other outside group is subject to it. But for these reasons, as with prior proposals to open rulemakings along these lines, I will not be able to support this one.
I appreciate you giving your reasons, because I wasn't here for the previous discussions on this matter. But let me say for my part, in response, that I'm certainly not interested in enacting the Disclose Act. I mean, that's not what this is. This is a request to open a rulemaking so people can comment about those matters that we would later determine whether it was appropriate or not to have a rule on those matters. And, you know, in your argument about our role is to either regulate with regard to what Congress has enacted as opposed to, if there is a void, we then can't regulate. Well, you know, clearly we enacted a regulation relating to Citizens United and the application of Citizens United. We have to respond to court decisions. And this is just such an instance where the court has spoken exceedingly clearly about the issue of disclosure and of coordination, and we have not dealt with that issue. I never meant to say that super PACs wouldn't be covered under our super PAC rule. However, we never anticipated the situation now with respect to super PACs that has changed the dynamic in campaigns today. And therefore, our rules are antiquated. And that's the evidence of that is we have never had a coordination determination at this commission, ever, in all the cases that we've done. And some of them perhaps didn't merit that decision. Some of us might think did. But part of the issue has to do with the fact that the rules are simply not applicable to the situation that we find ourselves in this country, in our political process today. And so I think that it is clearly our obligation as a commission, as we all agreed, the four of us agreed, and despite a lot of criticism that I received from joining with you on Citizens United rulemaking, it is very important that this commission, we may not be able to do some major issues, we may have disagreements in how facts apply to the law in certain cases, but at the base, it's our obligation to provide rules to deal with the new law. And so it seems to me it's been, 6 years since Citizens United was enacted, and it's about time that we enter into at least getting public comment on this issue. Is there any other? Commissioner Goodman.
Well, Madam Chair, we did agree to receive public comment, and we did. We received thousands of comments just this year. We had an all-day hearing with dozens of witnesses.
That was on McCutcheon.
Madam Chair, it was putatively about McCutcheon, and then the chair announced that it was about any issue that might be of interest to you. You said that quite publicly. The Republicans joined you and said, yes, make it about any issue you would like. And we heard far-ranging opinions here on everything. By the way, we heard very little on McCutcheon, if you recall. We heard virtually nothing about McCutcheon. We heard a lot of testimony from a variety of perspectives here in an all-day hearing involving dozens of people from the left, the right, the pro-regulatory viewpoints, the more libertarian viewpoints. We heard from individual citizens who came and spoke. So we have opened our doors, and we heard a variety of opinions on both sides of this issue just this year. So to some extent, when this new petition came in from Commissioner Weintraub and yourself, this was a request for a redo of the February hearing. Let's go out for a public hearing again on these subjects. So my point is that the ink is barely dry on a hearing we just held on these issues with persuasive points of view on both sides of these issues, including, I know, the president's attorney, Robert Bauer, who sat right here at this table where our secretary is, and said, if you go this direction, you will lose. Now, Vice Chair Peterson discussed a lot about what Congress is debating, and Congress is debating many of these issues, has debated it in every year since Citizens United, and has chosen not to act, has chosen not to change these laws, even though there are laws that people are proposing to change. But in addition to what the Congress is doing, we don't write on a blank slate here because of what the courts have ruled. So the courts have given us constrictions on how we regulate, for example, the issue of greater public disclosure in Buckley v. Valeo and in Massachusetts Citizens for Life. The courts have told us you don't have full regulatory authority over any organization that makes an expenditure. Only those that have the major purpose of influencing elections are political committees that you have full regulatory authority over. Now, we have had debates over how to apply that legal rule, but that debate is currently pending in federal court. Likewise, the public disclosure required of electioneering communications. Now, I wasn't here when the commission voted to constrict the disclosure of donors to organizations that make electioneering communications. That was a decision of the commission before I got here. There are commissioners here who voted for a constricted rule of disclosure in that case. But now that is in federal court, and the federal court is considering that issue as we speak. So, and as for independent expenditure reporting, we do have a requirement, and independent expenditures are being reported to us. They make up about 3%. This dark money issue that you're discussing is about 3% of all the political expenditures that we regulate and that are reported to us and made public. Even if we were to alter the line of the definition of political committee, we might get 20 to 30% of that 3% of those independent expenditures that are being reported to us. We know the organizations, whether it's the U.S. Chamber of Commerce or Planned Parenthood Action Fund or the SEIU, we know those organizations that are making those expenditures because they are reporting those expenditures to the American people. They're reporting them to us. The proposal here is for greater donor disclosure, which is really a function of the political committee status issue, which is in the federal courts right now. And even if the court tells us that we need to draw the line two clicks this way or this way in defining when an organization is a political committee requiring full disclosure of all of the 501c4's donors, for example, it may, a different rule may capture 20 to 30% of the 3% that's being spent in politics today. So this is a 1% issue. We are spending 80% of the debate here over 1% of the money in politics and greater disclosure of it, not non-disclosure versus disclosure, but that we want to know. The target of this is to make Planned Parenthood Action Fund and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce disclose who gave money to them to the tune of about 1% of all the expenditures in politics today. But mind you, this agency was the clearinghouse, and on our website today, you can look at $7.3 billion in expenditures in the 2012 election cycle, and $5.5 billion in expenditures in the 2014 election cycle. And of those amounts, 4% of that $7.3 billion in 2012 was from organizations that do not disclose their donors. And 3% of the $5.5 billion in 2014 was independent expenditures by organizations that do not disclose their donors. So my point being that Congress has this in its breast at this time and is debating it and has been debating it for 5 years. But also, the courts are currently considering where to draw these lines as we speak. And even if the courts tell us we drew a line improperly, you're perhaps going to get greater disclosure under the extant rules and the extant First Amendment parameters around our regulatory jurisdiction in the tune of about 1% more in donor disclosure in America. So, for all these reasons, because Congress has these issues in its breast, because the courts have these issues, both political committee status and the electioneering communication donor disclosure rules, and because we just had a hearing with persuasive points of view on all sides of this issue just 10 months ago in this very room, this is not a path that we should continue down. I say let's watch to see if Congress wants to change these rules. Let's wait for greater guidance from the courts in the cases now pending regarding political committee status and electioneering communication donor disclosure. And that's why I'll vote no on this petition. Thank you.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not going to try and address everything that Commissioner Goodman just said, but let me make a few points. When it comes to coordination, Congress left the rulemaking to us. They did not come up with a good agreement. They couldn't come up with an agreement on how they thought the coordination rules ought to work. They said the last time they sent it back to us and they said, you know what, we don't like the rules you've got on the books. We think they're too narrow. We want you to expand them. We're going to give you some factors that you ought to take into account, but we're not going to tell you exactly how to do that. That is up to the commission. Writing coordination rules is squarely within the purview of this commission. The fact that we held a hearing earlier this year doesn't address our concern, because what this petition is asking for is not that we simply hold a hearing, but that we actually change the rules, because those coordination rules, to pick one out of the four, were written before the advent of super PACs and single-candidate super PACs and all of the activities that people read about in their newspapers every single day about the interrelationships between the super PACs and the candidate committees and the candidates themselves. And we have not changed those coordination rules, as is our direct responsibility since Citizens United. We haven't even considered whether they work in the current environment. What is within the purview of the courts right now is not what is the best possible rule for the sake of our democracy, but merely whether certain decisions that were made, in some cases by four commissioners and in some cases only by three commissioners, were legally allowed to be made. It's an entirely different standard than saying what is the best possible rule for the sake of citizen participation, for the sake of rules that make sense and that adequately address the way people are conducting their campaigns and conducting their outside activities today. And I have to address the 3% figure. I've heard that line before, and really it is so misleading. Because a lot of money is spent in politics by candidates in House races where everybody knows who the winner is going to be, and not a lot of outside spending is going into those races because it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that one candidate or another is going to win because of the way the district lines are drawn. Doesn't mean those candidates don't spend money in their races. They do, and that goes into the $7 billion total, and this year, who knows, next year, who knows what the total will be, certainly above $7 billion. But a lot of money is spent in politics on races where pretty much the answer is known before anybody takes a single vote. Where the outside money goes is to the races where it matters. In 2014, when the control of the Senate was up for grabs and there were 10 top races where everybody knew there was a possibility of power shift, the outside money flooded into those races. In at least 7 out of those top 10 races, there was more outside spending than spending by the candidates. In 2 or 3 of those, the outside spenders spent more than twice what the candidates spent. So if you look at, let's look at all the spending that goes on all over the country for any political race, yes, you can say the outside spending and the dark money that's part of that outside spending is a very small percentage of the total, but it is a huge percentage of the total in the races where it matters. And as I found the quote, by the way, with the able assistance of my staff, in a world in which, and I'm quoting now from today's USA Today article, outside groups have sponsored a whopping 81%, so I misspoke, I thought it was 84, it's only 81, 81% of the ads so far in the Republican primary, up from 67% at this point in the 2012 campaign, and just 1% at the same stage of the 2008 campaign, way back before the federal courts paved the way for super PACs. In that world, to say, well, there's really only, 3% of outside money, or dark money, so we don't really need to worry about that. And it won't make a difference to any voter to know who is trying to spend the money in the races that count. I just fundamentally disagree with that, and I don't think I'm the only person in America who does.
Okay. Yes, Commissioner Goodman.
One reaction.
Of course.
And that is the issue of coordination. Yes, they are our rules. And this commission spent a decade trying to draw the lines of coordination that are currently in effect. As a result of about 5 years of effort in trying to investigate and punish the Christian Coalition in the mid to late 1990s, where this commission took a very broad view of what constitutes coordination, and ultimately the federal district court told the Federal Election Commission it had an overbroad definition of what could constitute under the First Amendment coordination. So the commission drew new lines as a result of that. Then Congress did instruct the commission. Congress did act, as Commissioner Peterson has indicated. Congress enacted a law, the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, that requested the commission to redraw the coordination lines. The commission went back to the drawing board in the early 2000s, redrew the line. A court told the commission it had drawn the line inappropriately, so the commission went back to the drawing board again. And from 1995 to 2005, the ink is, in constitutional sense, barely dry. This commission has drawn, stumped its toe, redrawn, been instructed by Congress to redraw, stumped its toe again, and redrawn the lines we have for what are and are not coordination. So this commission spent a decade trying to draw the lines where they are today, and because independent expenditures have existed since the 1970s. Citizens United didn't fundamentally change the parameters around the constitutional parameters around what is coordinated and what is not. It may have illuminated that there's a lot more independent expenditures occurring. But and the talk about how the discussion of the chair that we haven't enforced coordination, you know, at one point, Chair Ravel, you said in the press that there were 29 cases and we hadn't found coordination in any one of them. And we went back and looked at the demagoguery over 29 coordination cases. And in 27 of 29 cases, the Office of General Counsel recommended dismissal that there wasn't sufficient evidence to proceed on coordination. So coordination is a very complicated and difficult issue, and this commission has struggled with it and has drawn lines for what is and is not. And then as for the issue of the courts may not be over there drawing right now the best possible line. What they are going to be considering is the constitutional limits under the First Amendment of the lines we draw. And this proposal suggests that we don't wait for court guidance on those First Amendment boundaries, that we rush ahead regardless of where the courts may draw those First Amendment lines. And I would prefer to get the guidance of the courts on where the First Amendment rights of American citizens begin and end. Thank you.
You know I should stop myself and not make this comment, but, you know, I'm so glad to hear you talk about the significance of the General Counsel's recommendations, and I'm certainly hoping going forward that you will adhere to that, and every time the General Counsel makes a recommendation, you will think that that's the appropriate way to go in a case. I'll bring it up on other occasions for you. So, did you have a motion?
I do have a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Walter. Sorry, I didn't realize you wanted to
Yeah,
wait.
At the risk of prolonging
you.
This.
No problem.
It's just that, for me, I'll support the motion, but I do think it's got its issues because certainly we're right in the middle of a very contentious cycle. At the very, I wouldn't call it the tail end, but things will get more intense as the time passes. And so for us to actually promulgate a rule prior to the election might be, if it wasn't problematic before, substantially more now during that period. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't continue to listen to what's going on around us, because there's because of the avalanche of new money that previously wasn't in the system, and the ways it's being used, and the potential for abuse without regulation, I think grows. And I think so we should try and keep our ear to the ground as best we can for as long as we can, to the point where people will ultimately say we've got to do something, maybe even us. And I think now's the time to go ahead and do something. Now, on here, we haven't offered any proposed rules, and I think that in a perfect world, not here right now, it would be good to have some drafts that would focus discussion. The hearing that we had earlier this year did say, anybody who wants to say whatever you want, you're free to say it, but we didn't really give any notice to people as to it might be available to talk about these issues in substance and to prepare for them and that kind of thing. So I think a hearing along that line would be appropriate even now, even if we didn't vote on this prior to the election. And as we go along, people, everybody comes more educated on these issues, and the sooner we all become more educated, the better and more intelligent a decision is going to be made. A good example, this is a question over the 3% issue that's been talked about. There's a variety of different ways to look at that, and as there is for a lot of things. And the comment was made that our coordination rules are anachronistic, but as a practical matter, that suggests that they worked once, and they never have. But it doesn't mean that since we have a charge to do that, we shouldn't make an effort as soon as we can to try and craft even remedial measures, minor ones, so that the public and the people who want to participate in the system know the danger zones. And yes, I mean, the commission's gone off and said, well, we think this probably should be coordination, and we launch forward, and people get hurt in the process because there's no guidance. And it's not anything wrong with the agency trying to enforce what they think probably the law ought to be in a given case with given facts. But by the time you get to the end of a case, it may not have even looked that right, you know, in hindsight. So I think the reason I'm supporting it is I think it will offer an opportunity again for us to continue to educate, re-educate, rethink, and refine our thinking so that the facts that are before us when we ultimately get to a vote will be more intelligent. And I also think that every time we do something like this and develop a record, it's one more thing that Congress can take into consideration when they're ready to actually do something themselves. They can say, look, the FEC has been doing this off and on. They've tried to do it. Like Commissioner Goodman said, we've tried and we've kept falling on our face and we try again and it doesn't work. Courts keep telling us what to do, but they're novices in all of this themselves. And they only can really respond to what's before them in a given case. And even on Citizens United, there wasn't a big record on the implications of any of this. So I think every time we do this in a way like this, it's a basis for other people who are involved in the process, whether it's Congress or the courts, to have the ability to see the implications that are involved here. And I also think we ought to bring in not just people who are in the middle of the system, the parties, but people from the outside who have a chance to look at the psychological and social impacts of this. For example, some corporation can come in with a truly independent idea, but nothing's going to stop anybody from coming in and looking at the policies that some organization is interested in or some party or that in a small town and basically drowned out the effort of some who want to change the law to even participate in the system because they say, well, we know it's not going to work this time because I can't fight this big entity coming into a small town. And I think I think that Wyoming case expressed the angst that exists when there's a over powerful financial force that is driving the decision-making process and the way people react to it. So for those reasons, I support it. I think we ought to keep trying and learning, and this offer some information. I think since corporations are now people, we need to find out what people are part of the corporation. And I think there's a time when we should look at how we are going to view the influx of foreign money through the corporate scheme. And I don't mean to use the word scheme in a pejorative context, but in the corporate world, increasingly can be a party and a participant in this system with large amounts of money. And so I think we've got to have the ability to know really what that means in the context of who's behind the money when that situation exists. Those are my comments.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Hunter.
With respect to the coordination cases that we've dealt with here as a commission in the enforcement context, we all know anybody can file a complaint, and that's where we have live cases before us. We had approximately 29 cases in the recent past on this issue, and we took a look at all of those, and as Commissioner Goodman points out, the Office of General Counsel recommended not going forward in the vast majority of them, and in the vast majority of them, there were 4 votes to agree with the Office of General Counsel. The small subset, I don't have my chart in front of me, but my recollection is the small subset of cases where we disagreed on how to enforce our regulation was largely about whether somebody's familial ties. I think we had a case of a brother and maybe a girlfriend, I'm not really sure, but people's familial ties may be a presumption in some people's mind that there's coordination. I think speaking for this side of the table, that doesn't, to us, mean that there is an automatic, there should be an automatic presumption that there is coordination. So it's a very small sort of technical subset of issues. It's not the sort of highfalutin kinds of things some people might be thinking we're talking about. And I think in some of the proposals I've heard my colleagues make, they would like to make a presumption that if there is a familial tie, that there is coordination, and we're not in favor of that. It's just not something that we think is permissible for a lot of different reasons, one of them constitutionally based. So I don't want people to walk away thinking this is, it's a pretty narrow issue, and we do have, as has been pointed out by my colleagues, we do obviously have a coordination regulation that people follow. I think it makes a lot of sense, and I personally, you know, think it works quite well. There's not that much ambiguity in it, in my opinion. I think it's well crafted, and it's gone through many iterations, as has been discussed today. So I see no reason to change that. I think it's working well, and I don't see the kinds of complaints that caused me to think we should amend it. One of the things Commissioner Walther mentioned was people drowning out other people's speeches, and somebody else mentioned civic participation. And those are all policy issues that some people are concerned about, but they're not within our purview. Those are not the kinds of things that we have an ability to say, you know, somebody who's exercising their constitutional right in funding an independent expenditure, whether they drown everybody out or not, they have a constitutional right to do so, and it's not within our purview to try to stifle that.
Okay, thank you. Are there any comments? The motion.
Well, I'll just make one other brief comment before that. On the topic of the 29 coordination cases, I think there were about a third of them that I thought there were grounds for investigation. Some of them were cases like the super PAC that was established and funded by the candidate's mother, who had also appeared in campaign commercials for the candidate, and some of us thought that we ought to at least ask some questions. I mean, remember that these coordination cases have all come to us in the context of whether to open an investigation, and we did not ask a single question. We did not open a single investigation, and there are more cases in-house right now where I predict once they are put before us, that some of them raise some meatier issues than these kinds of familial relationships that Commissioner Hunter was talking about, and I am not overly sanguine that even once we get outside the bounds of familial relationships, that we will find any more grounds for agreement on some of the close connections between some of the super PACs and the candidates. But having said that, I think I will proceed to the motion. Of course, if anybody else wants to say anything after I make the motion, that's fine. Whereas on June 19, 2015, and June 22, 2015, the Commission received petitions from Make Your Laws PAC, Inc., Make Your Laws Advocacy, Inc., and Public Citizen, requesting that the Commission revise its rules to respond to the January 2010 Citizens United v. FEC Supreme Court decision. Whereas the Commission received approximately 11,759 comments from 11,769 commenters on the Notice of Availability published in the Federal Register on July 29, 2015. Whereas 11,414 commenters, nearly 97% of the total commenters, supported the petitions and urged the Commission to open a rulemaking as requested in the petitions. Whereas numerous studies show that the current campaign finance system is diminishing public trust in the democratic process, there's a footnote in the document if anybody's interested. Whereas in response to the Citizens United decision and its progeny, the Commission has made, in the words of one commenter, the Brennan Center, little effort to ensure that remaining valid provisions of the Act continue to be implemented consistent with congressional intent. And whereas as a result, again in the words of the same commenter, our political system is even more vulnerable to corruption and less transparent than it ought to be, I move that the Commission open a rulemaking and that the Office of General Counsel draft a notice of proposed rulemaking that proposes to revise Commission regulations as follows. 1, to require full public disclosure of corporate and labor organization independent spending, consistent with both the Citizens United decision and the Act's requirement that outside spending groups disclose their donors. 2, clarify that the prohibition on foreign national campaign-related spending restricts such spending by U.S. corporations owned or controlled by a foreign national. 3, clarify that corporations and labor organizations are prohibited from coercing their employees and members into providing financial or other support for the corporations or labor organizations' independent political activities. And 4, require that the expenditures made by super PACs and other outside spending groups are truly independent of federal candidates, consistent with the Citizens United decision and its progeny. And of course, were we to actually open such a rulemaking, I would welcome any other proposals on these same topics that our colleagues wish to put into the notice of proposed rulemaking.
Thank you. Are there any questions, comments? All right. All those in favor, please indicate it by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
No.
All right, Madam Secretary, that matter fails by a 3-3 vote. Commissioner Weintraub, Walther, and myself voting yes. Commissioners Goodman, Hunter, and Vice Chair Peterson voting no. Okay, the next item.
Madam Chair, could I just ask the council, do we need to do anything else to dispose of the petitions?
The regulations require the commission to publish in the Federal Register a notice of disposition explaining why the commission has chosen not to go forward with the rulemaking. in the last...
Attach the transcript.
Well, we've tried that. So in the last few rulemakings where the motion to open the rulemaking has deadlocked, the commission has not been able to approve by four votes the notice of disposition. So it is a regulatory requirement. It hasn't been happening lately, I guess, is the short answer.
Madam Chair, I have an inquiry.
Commissioner Goodman.
Mr. Noddy, would it be adequate to issue by majority vote of the commission a statement that says, for the reasons the commissioner stated at the hearing of this date, the vote failed by a vote of 3-3, and then attach a transcript of the hearing?
That, yes, certainly, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, we can vote. Maybe after this, we can take a quick break.
Okay. All right, do we need to vote on that? Or can we do that by consensus?
It would need to be separately approved, we can draft it.
Okay.
Send it around.
All right, thanks. Okay, we're going to take like a couple minutes before we go to the next item. And, you know, I was going to suggest that we break so that we could all attend the wonderful party that's downstairs. I'm sure you all brought your New Orleans beads, but the problem that we have is this. We have a number of items still remaining on the open session, and we have, if by my count, still 10 matters that have not been resolved on the executive session. And this is the last day for the resolution of them, at least with respect to matters that we've put over to today. So, Commissioner Goodman.
Just as a preview, looking at the agenda.
Executive session agenda?
No, ma'am.
Are you talking about?
This open meeting agenda, just to understand where we're headed. We've just concluded matter five.
Five.
Mm-hmm. Under matter six, the first two items are really one item. And that was my proposal. There was a memorandum from me about
with respect to
deregulating state and local political parties.
Right.
And that's the first two memoranda. Now, that failed by a vote of 3-3. I didn't request this continue on the agenda.
Oh, okay.
Now, I thought Commissioner Weintraub might want it to be there for other purposes.
Well, I had a motion, as you know, at the last meeting to couple your proposal with a proposal of mine.
Yes. So,
And you said you wanted more time to...
Well, I assume that's why those are still on the agenda, so they can be discussed. But my point is they're not going to take a renewed discussion. I guess my next question are we planning on discussing?
Let me just interject for a minute. Commissioner Weintraub did have a motion on the table, as I understand it, with respect to. I mean, this is kind of related to it. She's combined it with the other proposal.
We still need to have a vote on my motion.
And so we still need to have a vote and potentially a discussion.
Okay. So I guess I'm just trying to understand.
Okay.
Are we planning? We have already discussed the next document, the draft NPRM implementing party segregated accounts. That is not part of the current pending motion, but I don't think it requires a lot more discussion.
No,
here
I agree
today.
With you on that.
Okay. The next is technical modernization rule.
And I know you asked to put that over.
I did not. I think that the request was that we weren't prepared to vote on it today because we wanted to raise additional issues. Now, I am open, I'll defer to the vice chair, on whether we discuss it further today or without a vote or whether we move it to January. I guess I want to know what the commission's pleasure is on that.
Well, it seems to me, look, I do have a comment about that one. I mean, by the time we ever decide this issue, it's not going to be modern anymore. I mean, we have had this on the agenda for months, and the Office of General Counsel has worked really hard on keeping us advised of what was in it. And I mean, it just concerns me that we keep postponing this matter.
And the genesis of this was something we started 2 years ago.
Yes.
I'm happy to discuss it today. I just want to know for purpose. This is a procedural inquiry.
Yeah.
Are we going to discuss it today?
Look, if the will of the commission is not to discuss it today and put it over, that's fine with me. I would just, you know, sort of put in my strong desire that it be heard early in the year and that we actually do something about it already.
Okay. I'll follow the chair's lead on whether we discuss it. I'm prepared to discuss it if the commission wants to discuss it. Then the last is the subject of, I guess, I couldn't remember whether there was a motion on the floor or whether the Commissioner Weintraub was going to make a new motion today. But if there was a commission on the floor, the last matter is the subject of a motion that's to be made or voted on today.
That's right.
Okay, I understand that.
Right. You know, no, I don't think okay. it's – I agree with you that I don't think that this is necessarily –
Item 7, I have requested to be held in part because I'm waiting still. There was an agreement at Commissioner Weintraub's request that the Office of General Counsel was going to provide an amendment. We've also had a court opinion in the meantime that I think – bears upon this issue, and that is how transparent we are with the records, the enforcement file records that we make public. But I've asked to hold that in light of that court opinion, and also I'm still waiting edits from the Office of General Counsel. So,
I did not receive your request that it be held.
And just to be clear, it is not my understanding that the Office of General Counsel is under an obligation to edit your document. We had extended colloquy on this last time. We have asked for guidance from the Office of General Counsel, but in my view, I don't think that I do not believe that it is the view of a majority of the commission that the general counsel is bound to start with your document and editing it rather than giving us their own view.
Okay.
Let me also clarify something, actually. This is why I was confused. Item 7 is the rulemaking on reporting multi-state independent expenditures.
No, ma'am.
Are you talking?
That's item 8. Multi-state independent expenditures, at least on the agenda I'm holding, is matter 8.
Okay. Yeah. There it is. I'm not going to blame anybody. It's okay. Sorry for.
And I don't know where we stand on that. Is that the subject of a vote today or a discussion?
That's up to you guys.
Oh, huh.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I think there's a motion, perhaps, on the.
Well, I'm not sure.
Oh,
it was my
okay.
understanding that my Republican colleagues wanted to have a vote on that, but maybe I'm wrong.
On the independent expenditure?
On the multi-state
report.
I believe Commissioner Hunter has the lead on that issue, and I thought she was discussing this with you. She's discussed it with you more than she has with me.
Well, she has discussed it with me, and I have discussed it with her, and unfortunately we were not able to come to an agreement.
Right. But those are the items. That's what's left. So that's why I think it would be good for us to do them in the morning so that, or I guess it's not morning anymore,
before
we break, because there's a lot of people in the audience and as well as, you know, press who it would be unfair to make them come back while we're reveling in New Orleans.
Cuisine.
FEC New Orleans.
Yes.
So.
Okay.
And then there's the all-important passing of the torch, too.
You can dispense with that. Just keep things going the way it's going.
No. So. We're not going to dispense with it.
and we need to adopt new meetings.
And,
yes.
So we can all come back again and have some more fun.
Okay.